Okay, there we go. Okay, good. We're going to record this. And when I use this photo booth, my image sometimes freezes. So hopefully it'll freeze in a good likeness of me. I don't know. Let's hope. All right. So, okay, everybody can hear me and see me. That's great. I'm recording. All right. So thank you so much for joining me today. Glad that you could make it. I'm going to talk a little bit about getting your first freelance clients. And, you know, perhaps some of you are already freelancing or you went through the course a few months or years ago, and that's fine. And so this is just pretty much a presentation that I've given a couple of times before, but there's always something new to think about whenever it comes to getting clients. And I'm always changing my opinions on what will work in terms of getting clients, because I'm always trying to get clients just like everybody else. So this is basically what I've got to talk about here. All right, so getting your first freelance clients. The first thing you really do need to do before anything else is to set up your website. And I talk a lot about that, or not a lot, but a little bit about that in the six-week course. There's very many ways to do that these days. One of the easiest ways to do that is something like Wix, which is, even if you don't have much expertise at anything like that, Wix is a good way to set up a website pretty easily. And if you have a little more skill, then there's WordPress, and that's probably a lot harder to get that kind of capability up and running. I've been using WordPress for years and they have advanced it beyond anything that I really understand these days, so I'm kind of out of luck. If you know somebody who can do a website for you, that's great. And then also there's places like Upwork.com, Upwork, UPWORK.com, where you can find a freelancer who will work on your website. Of course, that's going to cost $1,000, maybe a little more. And then there's also places like Fiverr.com, F-I-V-E-R-R.com. And that's going to be, in my experience, hit or miss. Fiverr.com is great for designing a logo or something like that. But if you want a full-on website, maybe not. I haven't had much luck when I've gone through Fiverr with something like that. And if you have any questions as I'm going through, please do type it into the text box. It'll pop up and I'll be able to see it. All right, excuse me. All right, so when it comes to getting clients, it's a creative enterprise, all right? Clients aren't just going to come to you once you put up your website. We like to think that, but now I don't know how many websites are in the universe, but if we put up a website, there's going to be a billion other websites. And as far as getting onto the first page of Google for freelance medical writing, that takes years to do that. So it's not going to, the most of the business, nearly all of the business is going to be your low-hanging fruit, which I like to call it. So these are your academic connections. Maybe you work at a university or you've recently graduated. Go to their communications office, especially if it's a medical school or they have publications. Try to write for them. Obviously, try not to write for free, you know, but definitely go in there and introduce yourself. Past and current employers, current clients. So if you have a client, it's definitely a good idea to mention to them that, oh, well, if you like my work, would you mind referring me, or if we can help with any other kinds of projects that you do? So maybe you're currently writing needs assessments, and maybe they don't know that you can do slide sets or whatever it is, or manuscripts. So it's a good idea to educate your clients about all the different things you can do. And then anyone else you know. And medical writing, medical writing is a bit of an unusual business in that, at least for me down here in Atlanta, I mean, none of it's local. So I'm not going to go to a soccer match for my daughter and meet somebody who needs the services of a medical writer 9 times out of 10, right? So it's one of those things where it's really about making connections online first or by email. So that's the approach that that we've always taken here. All right, so, and that brings me to my point of, so do you do an email or a phone call? It depends a lot on your personality, but one thing I'm noticing or realizing lately is that, you know, email is a very passive approach, and it's because of that, it's much easier, right? So you don't have to experience rejection, and, you know, it's pretty much hit or miss, right? So you can send out a bunch of emails, and if you don't get a response, well, no harm in that, although you won't have any clients. So I'm starting to think that it is a good idea to call people, but not necessarily cold call in the sense of, you know, just going through phone numbers that you don't know who they are, but trying to reach out by phone, or maybe even you don't want to bother people during the working day, or there are some salespeople that say you should bother people during the working day, but I still don't like to do that. But I think that once people get to know you, it's much easier to have them hire you rather than a cold email. So anything you can do to get your services known, for example, put a video of yourself on your website, a small one, get it nice. It doesn't have to, you don't have to spend a lot of money on it. It can be with your iPhone, and just make a short video describing your services. Now, I'm not saying everybody should do that, right? But that's one way where you can get people to know you. Like, and if they're looking at three different websites of different freelancers, they're going to be thinking, well, this person's gone to a lot of trouble to put a video on their website, and then I have a sense of who they are, at least, or what they're talking about, and whether or not they can do the job, I'm not sure, but at least it will help them know you. So that's, I guess, the difference between email and a phone call. And I would also say that it's a good idea to personally visit your clients wherever possible, and you don't want to be kind of like a stalker about it, like, you know, go travel across the country and go visit them for no reason. But if you're in the area, you know, and they've given you some business or they are a potential client, then maybe you could perhaps, you know, just meet them for, go to their office or meet them for coffee, or, you know, be careful about their time. But if you could buy them lunch or, you know, drop off a little gift or something like that, or a little a capability summary. So reaching out to people in person and also networking are actually, I would say, increasingly important in this world of email that we deal with these days. All right, so having said that about email, I'm going to talk more about email because it is one of the ways, it's a passive way of getting clients. So it is a numbers game, and I've found over the years, and it still holds true to a certain extent, but if you send out 100 emails, you may get about 5 to 10 responses. In fact, I think now, like 10 years later, 15 years later, it's actually, you will get maybe a couple of responses in 100. Unfortunately, it's a little less. And maybe out of those, you'll get one or 0.5 clients or whatever. But it has worked for us to email people and get clients. And it's not, you know, not as much as you'd like it to be, but you can get clients that way. But it really takes a lot of emails. And then, I don't know the exact stats, but the percentage of people that respond on the first email that you send is very low. It might be 1 in 100. But once, if you have a way to contact them, maybe a week later with another email, and even maybe 3 to 5 emails sequenced out over time, which unbelievably is, you know, that's what people do these days, is all these emails, right? So you're getting these constant sequence of emails. Those are all automated. And there's different ways to do that. One of the ways, and I think there's somebody mentioned a setup with Google where you can set up emails. Sorry, I'm being really specific. Somebody mentioned a setup with Google. There is a Google program that is a free way to send out emails. The one that we've used is quickmail.io, and they do a 14-day free trial, and then it's $37 a month. And I think in my 6-week materials, there's a video on how to use that. And basically, you can set that up with the email that you want to send them, and then you can set it to what you want. Like maybe 3 days later, you'll send a follow-up email. And the great thing is, if you load in a spreadsheet with the email, the company name, and the person's name that you're contacting, then it's all automated, and it'll actually put the person's name into the email, so it seems very less spammy because you're using the person's name. So that's a good program to play around with, and you can actually get quite a few responses to that. You can't really send out more than about 20 emails a day that way, because you get classified as spam by Google, and then you go into people's spam folders, so that's not helpful, but there is a limit, but it's better than sending them out manually. There is, though, let me see. Yes, I was going to just, I don't have it on the slide, but another way to approach the email sending, instead of sending out like 20 emails, you might try sending just like one really carefully tailored email a day, so that's an email that you've researched, you know who the person is, you know why they might need a writer. Maybe they have a press release that they've just sent out, the company's merged, whatever the thing might be where they might need a writer. You would make that very targeted to them. And I got to tell you, I mean, I receive emails about people wanting to write all the time, right? Every day I receive an email, and sometimes they're like, "Dear sir, you know, can I write for your company?" I'm like, "No, you can't." They don't know anything about the company, or they haven't taken any time to do that. And I know, I feel bad. I mean, I want to give everybody work, right? But no, I mean, like if they can't take the time to target the email to what our company might need, then it's a wasted email, unfortunately. So one approach is to do the opposite of that and really just like make a goal to send out like one email a day that's very targeted. And that's a good approach too. So of course, no spelling errors. It should be short and sweet, and use the company name or the person's name to who you're writing. And then you want to talk about your benefits versus your features. So this is marketing 101, but for instance, you don't want to say, "Well, I have a PhD in molecular biology and I've been writing 5 years." No, you don't want to say that. You want to say something like, You will benefit from my strong writing background. I have clinical expertise that I can bring to your projects. Use the word "you" a lot, and really think about what's in it for them. So, because that's what they're thinking when they're reading your email, they're thinking, "What's in it for them?" All right, or "What's in it for me?" Let's see. And I hope that, let's see. Does anybody have any questions? If so, please just type them into the text box. All right, so where to find emails, and this is again the creative side of things, right? So you, sometimes, you know, people freeze up. They're like, "Oh, where do I find the emails?" Well, first of all, get on Google, open that up, open up Google, right, and start thinking about who. First of all, what you want to write. Do you want to write feature articles? Do you want to write manuscripts? Do you have a background in neurology? What is it that you can write? And then from that, what you know about yourself and the kind of writing that you want to do, then go from there. So let's say you like you know a lot about Alzheimer's, for example, or something like that. You know, go to AARP and offer to write them an article on Alzheimer's or whatever different publications might be in that field. Make that search based on your own knowledge base, right? So there's no one size fits all. And, you know, it's not easy getting your first clients, right? So you've got to stop thinking that you're going to get clients by sending out two or three emails and thinking, "Well, this is hard. I'm not getting any business." Well, you've got to send out, I mean, however many it takes, send out 1,000 emails over a couple of weeks and see what happens. I can pretty much guarantee if you do a good job with that, that you're going to be getting some clients if you do that work, But and that's very easy to do, but it's tedious, right? And boring to find all those emails, but that's just what it is, right? To get your first clients. All right, so there's Google, obviously, and then membership directories such as ACEHP, that's the Alliance for Continuing Education in the Healthcare Professions, something like that. So that's a directory. You can type that in, and it'll pull up the membership directory. And all those people in there are people that would hire freelance, not all of them, but a lot of them work for companies that would hire freelance medical writers to work on CME projects, okay? There's a directory called the PMD, which is Pharmaceutical Marketers Directory. And thanks, Carolyn. I'll answer that question in a minute. So the PMD.com, they give you a two-day free trial, and I'd recommend looking around that directory. It has a lot of what that directory is. It's directed towards big pharma, right, who would hire those companies, and those companies who are advertising in that directory are actually the ones that you're targeting. So they have their contact information for their clients to reach them, but you can reach them also using that contact information. So it is kind of expensive. I think it's about, I'm not sure what it is now, it's about $400 to subscribe to this online. But if that gets you even one client, then that's pretty good. So you can check that out for 2-day free trial. And I think related to this and the same publishers, I think it's called Medical Marketing and Media. Medical Marketing and Media, and I think that's free or very low cost. And that is a useful magazine because it talks about all the goings on in the medical education pharma industry in terms of communications and all the agencies and this, that, and the other. And it's a very, to me, it's like whenever I read it, I get all geeked up. Like it gives me a bunch of different ideas about who to reach out to. And things like that. So I would suggest checking that out. I think it's MMM-online, if I recall. All right, .com. Okay, so this right here, this long, ugly URL, is the Dynamic Small Business Search. And that is a function of the Small Business Administration. And it's actually a database with subcontractor information that the government will search, right? Small businesses. And what's great about that is that you can actually, if you put that link into, you know, a browser, I was trying to think of the word browser. If you put that in, you can actually pull up a CSV file of different companies, right? So you might type in a keyword that's e-learning, for example, e-learning, or medicine, or science, or whatever it might be, and type that in and see what kinds of companies have that as a keyword in their capabilities. And it's kind of a long shot. It's going to get you a bunch of emails that aren't relevant to what you do, what we do as medical writers. But this is a spreadsheet that you can actually load into that Gmail program. Quickmail. This one right here, this Quickmail from two slides back, that if you format it right, you can actually load that into Quickmail, and then you have 5,000 emails loaded into Quickmail, and if you're sending out 20 a day, and you can just like let it sit and just send out emails, and it's a passive way of doing it, but it's one approach that you can take. And I know this is probably sounding a little complicated to most of you who are listening, but if you just check this out and see what I'm talking about, and then if you have any questions, you can email me. All right, and then there's something called Gust. Let me just see, make sure. Oh yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a couple of slides. I'll talk about it now. All right, sorry, I'm confusing myself. Okay, there's something called Gust.com, and I'm actually going to pull this up on a website. Let me see if I can do this here. All right. It's connecting. All right. So Sorry, everybody. Oop. Just pulling this up here. There we go. All right, so Gust. Gust is an investor. Gust is an investor database, all right? So it's a startup. Incubator? I don't know what the right word is. But anyway, it's a website where... let's see, what am I doing here? Is it going to let me sign in? No, it's not. Okay. So basically, let's see if I can sign in via LinkedIn. Maybe that's what I'm doing. Sorry about this. I should have prepared this before the actual talk. All right. Okay, so I actually, and I think maybe you have to have a profile on here, which, you know, it's not much to set up a profile. But once you've got a profile on Gust, you can search it, and then you can search companies. All right, click companies. And then you can, for example, go to healthcare services, or maybe it would be digital marketing or, you know, the different categories. So let's look at healthcare services. All right, so these are all startups. They've got their information in there, and some of them have been funded and others haven't. But if you go through here, like, for instance, Sanabit Technologies, I don't know anything about this company, but it's medical devices, and you can find out if they've got... I think you can find out if they've got funding. Maybe not, I'm not sure. But you can at least go to their website, and you can see the different people involved, and maybe go to somebody who would seem like the person to go to. Maybe, let me see, doing this on the fly here. But this company makes devices for all these different indications. And so it might be a good idea, especially if they've just been funded, to ask them if they need any help with whatever their writing materials. These are startups. They're not going to have an internal medical writing team. And so that's just one example. But you can see there's 437 pages. Okay, so out of 437 pages, maybe a few of them will have different things on there that you might give you some ideas about contacting. All right, so that's just one idea. Then there are other sites like Gust. I think there's AngelList, and other places like that. There's also a very familiar thing called Meetup, which is, you know, not specific at all to medical writing. But in Atlanta, we've got something called, I think it's Health 2.0, which is, they have regular meetings, and it's all the sort of high-tech stuff going on here in Atlanta, which there is some of that, not too much, but there's some people there, and they're having a meeting coming up, so I'm going to go to it, you know, to see if I can, you know, give my business card out or talk to anybody. And so we are all free to do that in our respective parts of the nation, and see about, you know, just making connections with people. And I would recommend too, and I didn't, maybe haven't realized this as much until more recently, but, you know, most of us have been scientists or doctors, and so now we're learning how to write, or, you know, that's what we're working on. But a really important part of having your own business is being a salesperson. And, you know, especially if we're an introvert, as a medical writer, you know, many of us wouldn't think of us as being ourselves as being salespeople, but it's important to develop that skill. And there's lots of books to read on selling. And really, you know, what most of us know about selling or think about selling is that you're some kind of pushy person, you know, selling people and, you know, yammering on about why somebody should purchase your services. But really, selling is not about that these days. Selling is, how can I serve you? How can I help? How can my company help your business? How can I bring value to you? And so it's actually quite a good thing, really, if you think about it that way. It takes the negative attributes of selling out of it. So just think of it like that. when you're approaching a potential client that you're not, you know, there to bother them or give them the hard sell, but just really trying to sell your services. It's much better or to provide them service, sell your services by providing service. All right. Okay, and then I just put this slide in here just to be facetious, but avoid complaining about having no clients until you've sent out over 1,000 emails. Because, you know, I've had people say, well, it's been 6 months and I haven't got any clients. And I'm like, well, how many emails did you send out, or what have you done to get business? And, you know, well, a couple of days ago I sent out 5 emails. And so you're not going to get all the business that you need like that. And it might take a couple of months of persistent effort, right? So until you have your first clients, your job is really sending out emails. So it's important to look at it like that. All right, and then I was talking about this earlier. Oh, there's something called TechCrunch too, which if you're not into that, I think that's a very good thing to read about these days, because, you know, everything's all changing and we don't want to be left behind. I don't. I mean, I'm 50 years old. I can barely, you know, like I'm just on the edge of being able to use a computer. Like if people are older than me, for example, my husband, I mean, it's hard for him. He doesn't understand how to, you know, use some of the like word functions and stuff like that. So I think it's important to stay up to date if you're going to have your own business doing this kind of thing. Also look at press releases. And then this seems like a lot, and I never used to think this. I've always kind of been a bit, I don't know, would I say arrogant? Maybe arrogant, that if I do a really good job for people and of course I'm going to do that, they're going to keep coming back to me. I'm never going to have to spend time on that kind of thing. But I think ideally, if you're going to grow, you should have like at least an hour or two a day where you think about marketing, sales, reaching out to new clients. And that way, if you you won't find yourself without work, you know, if you always are priming that pump. So that is all I got on that. So let's look at some of these questions here. All right, so come on now. Of course, now it's not working. Let me see. Sorry, I'm just trying to get this open. All right, that's always something. I don't know if you can see this on my screen, but I'm clicking. My computer heard me talking about how I had technical expertise, and now it's trying to mess with me. All right. Let me see. All right, so the thing is, I can't see your questions right now, which that's kind of a problem. Let me see if I can. I think it has to do with the fact that I have absolutely no space left on my hard drive. That could be it. All right. Well, here's the thing. If you have a question and you've already typed it in, then if you type it in again, I think I'll be able to read it because it'll pop up on the screen. Or if you have any other questions, it'll pop up. Okay, here we go. Any particular tips for our website design? Okay. All right, that's what Carolyn said. Any particular tips for our website design? Well, you know, it's a challenge because, you know, designing a website is, you know, people go to school for several years to do that. And I'm reading your questions. I'm talking, Dustin. Okay, thank you for that. All right, so yeah, I mean, if I were you, like it depends on your background and what kind of skills you have, but you might consider designing, like getting a logo designed, or maybe, you know, the imagery on your website. You can go to a place like 99 Designs to do that, and that will be about $200 or $300. That's kind of an expensive option, but they will give you a lot of they'll give you a lot of different ideas, and then you pick your favorite one. So it's really a way to, okay, well, you're going to spend a little more, but you'll definitely get something you like. And that's better than if you just go to a graphic designer. Sometimes, you know, even one that you like might not do a design that you like. And then going to someplace like Fiverr, which, you know, that's cheap, but maybe won't be as good quality either. So that's a way you can do that. So that's the design of the website. But, you know, we're not designers, and it's okay. As long as our website, you know, is easy to read and you don't have to scroll up and down too much and that kind of thing. I mean, it's perfectly fine to have a very basic website. So I wouldn't even worry too much about that. The important thing is to have an online presence where you can put your samples and stuff like that. All right. Dustin is asking, what are your thoughts on offering a percent discount on the first? Oh, look at that. Thanks. Oh, here we go. Here's my messages coming up. Great. Thank you. Okay. So Dustin is asking, what are your thoughts on offering a percent discount on your first piece of work for a client as a method of generating a new client? Well, my approach in that situation, my thought about that is to not do that, because this is not a business to consumer type of business. All right, so this isn't like, you know, buy one get one free at the supermarket. It's not that kind of business. It is a business to business, right? So it's a different approach you would take, and you wouldn't want to undercut your value. So I would probably not offer a percent discount. If I thought it would work, I would do that. But I don't think it'll work. In fact, I think it will make them look at you suspiciously for some reason. And so I'm not sure that would be a good approach. What you can do on the first project, if you ever have the, you know, a first project with a client, you know, go to bat for them. Like, just do everything you have to do to make it really, really good. Like, whatever that is, even if, you know, you spend 5 more hours than you budgeted and just in proofreading and checking stuff and making sure it's exactly what they want, that's where I would put your discount, or that's where I would put the value into making it really, really good and putting in extra time. And so that is kind of a discount in a way, but they don't know they're getting a discount. But they do know that they like your work, and so that's going to be huge value going forward. All right, I hope that answered the question. Dustin's asking, Inkblot GDS on Etsy did my design very well done with multiple iterations and back and forth with alterations of the image for $48. Okay, that's great. I didn't know Etsy did that kind of thing. I thought that was more jewelry and stuff. So that's cool. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Inkblot GDS. I don't know if you can see these texts on the screen here. I'm not sure if you can or not. Oh, here's the link. Great. Yep, you're welcome. All right, let's see. Let's see if we have any other questions here. Oh, Carolyn asks, that's a good question. What would you talk about in the video for your website? Well, the first thing I would do is get my hair done. The first thing I would do is, there's an app on the iPad. If you have an iPad, of course, mine's not charged up, but a good thing to do, if you have an iPad or an iPhone, there's apps that you can get, like a teleprompter, where you can type in the text, and it's, so you'll have the iPad like this, and you'll have the text on one screen. So that makes for a much better professional kind of, like, you're not ad-libbing, you're actually sort of giving a professional kind of presentation. So if you have an iPad, and I think you can do it with an iPhone, it's a good idea to do that. And then what would you talk about? So I would talk about, hi, I'm Carolyn, or whoever you are. I say your name and say, you know, and what your background is, and, you know, maybe whatever it is that's going to set you apart from other writers. And you're not going to be separated from all other writers, but if you have an MD or whatever it is, it's certainly worth mentioning that. And any kind of writing experience, but keep it short. Like, I wouldn't do more than maybe a minute and a half for that video. Definitely keep it short. But just, yeah, it should just be very natural. You should be smiling. And don't say, like I just did, if you can avoid it. And make sure the lighting is good, too. All right. Okay, I think, do we have any other questions? Katie says, hi, Katie. As you search for clients, how do you know what services to offer to specific clients? Anything you feel you can do and that they need. So basically, I mean, really, we offer one service, and that's writing. So written communications, at least that's what I do, medical writing. So there's really nothing, I mean, everything's really very similar. It's all the same thing when it comes down to it, especially if you're writing for a clinician audience. You know, you might be writing a manuscript or a needs assessment or even a sales training module, or you might be creating a slide set. So really, you should offer clients anything that, first of all, that they need, and then that you can do, that you have done, and also maybe you haven't done it, but you know you can do it. So maybe in grad school you put together slide sets, but you haven't done a slide set as a professional writer. That doesn't mean that you can't do one, right? So you could do one. So it's perfectly okay to say that you can do that. All right, I hope that answered your question. I think that I might be missing the mark on that, but hopefully that'll answer the question. All right. Okay, good. All right, so I would say, you know, when it comes to getting clients, and this is kind of new agey, kind of woo-woo stuff, but if, you know, Henry Ford said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So you have to go out with the mindset that you know, the clients are out there, because let me tell you, they are. There's lots of clients, and they just have to get to know you and what you have to offer. And you have to be kind of convinced about that. So there's no point in dabbling in sending a few emails out and not getting a response back and then thinking, well, this doesn't work and, you know, blah, 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 being very negative. You've got to, and we all get that way, right? So we all feel that way. But you have to have really a positive mindset about the value that you have to offer. If you feel insecure about whether you are capable or, you know, get the skill that you need, like take more classes and take the training that you need to differentiate yourself. You know, I don't really talk much about regulatory writing, but if that's something you're interested in, you know, go get the training for that. There's raps.org. Whatever kind of training you need to get your confidence up is important before you start reaching out to clients. Or maybe not even before you start reaching out, but the more confident you feel, the better vibe you're going to put out there, the more likely they're going to hire you. Trisha says, for news writing, e.g. for Helio, Medscape, professional orgs such as AAP, how do you get your first assignment with no published pieces? Well, an editor from those organizations is going to be more interested in whether you can write a news piece as opposed to whether you've written a bunch of them. I mean, yeah, it's nice if you've written 1,000 pieces for Medscape. Of course, they're going to like that. But one of the things about this course, for example, is you're going to be submitting a lot of news pieces for grading, or not grading, but, you know, for review. And so that hopefully will generate some samples, right? So they don't have to be published. And if you, honestly, I mean, it's hard to say this, but, like, you know, the pieces that I get back from the people in taking the six-week course are, like, head and shoulders above the pieces that I've seen out there and that have, like, occasionally I'll edit news pieces for, like, Medscape or Doctor's Guide or something. I'll edit those pieces that other writers do. And I'm like, dang, they didn't go through my course, you know. And I don't want to be, you know, I'm not tooting my own horn here, but believe me, if you have gone through and you've done some samples and news pieces, I mean, you're head and shoulders above some of the people out there. So just know that. And the question is, how do you get your first assignment with these people? Well, it might be hard. I mean, you've listed, what, 3 or 4 different outlets there. I mean, you might have to approach 20 different outlets several times before you get your first, you know, your first assignments. But then also think about what you're adding to them. So you might be covering a conference in Orlando, Florida, where there's a meeting, and, you know, 3 months ahead of that meeting, you reach out to them, and, oh, yeah, they do need some pieces from that meeting. So you'll be head and shoulders above, you know, other people that they'd have to send there if you're already going to that meeting. So, but you've got to go in with a mindset that you can get work. And, you know, you just got to do that. You got to have a good mindset about it. Because if you don't, it's going to be hard. All right. Okay. Any other questions? I think we're good. All right. Well, thank you so much for hanging out, and have a great week. Hopefully this recorded okay, and I'll be able to put it up on the website at weekly call, 6-week course/weekly call. Thank you, everybody. Have a good week.